Here.
Environmental Health and Safety Manager Perrin.
Here.
Finance Manager Wong.
Here.
Power Division Manager Leon.
Here.
And myself, General Manager Mosley. Who do we have participating online through Zoom today?
We have Dan Shipman, John Shipman, Kristen McKillop. We have attendees of Charles Sharp, Paulette Chevalier, Carrie Haupt, and I'm not sure about the other one I have.
Okay, thank you. And then would you email me those so I have naming convention correct for meeting minutes?
I will do that.
Excellent. Thank you.
Okay. Good budget.
Good budget.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Let's go into approval minutes.
Mr. President, if I may, I neglected to add under staff present for the board meeting in December, Dan Leon, Power Division Manager, was actually present, and I did not list that, so if I may make that write-in correction.
Sure.
Thank you.
All right, any other questions or concerns about the minutes? Discussion?
Nothing from the public relations email as of 2:03 p.m.
Yeah, nothing online. See there. Okay. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Aye. Five ayes. Yeah, let's move on to approval of checks and warrants. How bad are you looking out there, Steve?
That's next one.
Good afternoon, board members. We did get our bills paid, so thanks for asking, though. On the cover sheet, we have December 20th, 2020 expenditures, and then payroll expenses, $745,353. Just want to call your attention to that. Note that was for three pay periods, actually, that we covered in December. That usually most months are just the two pay periods listed there. Going to the actual checks bills paid this year. Dan did his homework, so I'm going to call on him a number of times here. But on page one, check number 59273 was to Martin Crane and Rigging. And I didn't get these descriptions printed out too clearly here. This then happens to be a crane service. Was this for trash racks, Dan?
Was that for the trash racks at stations 2 and station 8?
That was $1,200, yeah. On the top of the next page 2, I'll call your attention to top line 59279, that came into Siblon Reed. Road repairs at panel 300 was completed that project, so that was the final payment on that project. Came in at, or at least for that portion of the project, came in at $567,000. And that is, we're working through FEMA to get some help on that one. A couple lines down, 59282, Oltig, is that how you pronounce
it? Correct, yes.
Oltig, engineers, for the Cal ISO meter installation. This was a 20% payment, $14,000. Dan, any other comments on that one?
So I looked at what the progress was on this, and so this section, part of the payment is for to complete their equipment procurement for us. So their scope includes equipment and services. So this completes their equipment procurement.
But they'll be doing services as
well. Yes, then the next installation. The next, yes. The next phases involve the engineering services at their facilities and also at our facilities in the field.
We have a check 20-1201 to California Department of Tax and Fee Administration. This used to be, this the new name, used to be the Board of Equalization. This is for water rights. $51,122 was a 6% increase actually over the prior year. And the year before that was a significant increase in these water rights fees. It was 17%, so we've seen some jumps in those fees that are passed through to us, and I think we've talked about that over the years. The next check, 59287 on December 11th, was for some helicopter service, and maybe Dan, you can talk on this a little bit.
Yeah, I'm going to get my notes here. I'm just running some notes here. So that was, again, that was which check number again?
So 59287.
287, okay, yeah. So this was the Littlegrass Dam, a downstream, and this was based on a storm event that occurred in 2019. The what's called, what we call the SF3 downstream gauging station, which measures the flow of water downstream of the dam, that whole structure was destroyed. And so there was debris, some of it lying in the streamway and some on the banks. So this was the one of the only options, but the only option we could come up with to get basically, you know, 2 to 3 thousand pounds worth of debris out of this deep canyon. So that was work that was done for that. And simply assist replace that valve, that being that gauging station with new equipment, so we can actually measure the flows as required by FERC license.
We have a payment 59294. That went to HDR Engineering. I'd like to highlight these a little bit just because they're technical professional services. 59294.
Oh, yeah.
Forestown Powerhouse Generator. Was it Stater?
Yes.
No work?
Correct. So this has been a... This generator, this asset, has had some degradation of the insulation on the generator stator winding, and so this is part of the repairs we're doing to the stator generator winding. We're actually doing some insulation repairs. The contract we have in place for that, yes, budgeted for this year, and then we needed to engage an engineering company, engineering services, to help us with some of the assessment of the existing and planning to make the repairs. So that's good.
So you'll be seeing that project in the next few months continuing to show up,
right?
Okay. Thank you, Dan. Page 3, right near the top, 59318, was a payment to Peterson CAD for $6,490. I didn't understand quite what all of this was. It was but it's our generator out at the treatment plant. And the ECM replaced, we had to replace the computer controller in that generator, and that was the cost on that. That's on that same page, further down near the bottom, 59353 was a payment to the Forest Service. We do this every year. It's our use permit for roads that we use. Have access to. And then my final comment is page 4, check number 59381 was our reimbursement for petty cash, and those are just the number of items that we purchased, $169.57. And then we see petty cash reimbursement again on the next page, page 5, 59406, just $9.50. That was for the water division side. This first check, 59381, was the power division, so we have two petty cash boxes. Just mention that over the year, so these cleared us up for the year. At year end, we balanced the boxes and balanced the petty cash boxes. Our total for the year 2020 was just $268 for the whole year. So I just wanted to point that out. So you're seeing on these lists all of our purchases and the checks leaving the agency. So those are my comments.
Any other division managers come up or raise that?
Maybe highlight on page 406, the last check number 59388. That's U.S. Geological Survey. Did you speak to that one, Steve?
No, I did not. The stream gauging program.
Yeah, so that's our annual fee for the stream gauging program. The one, while it's a small consolation, though, is they held the annual fee flat compared to the previous year as a result of COVID and the impacts that had. So we did see a basically a flat annual fee year over year on that one. Imagine not to expect that to continue. Typically, you see about a 3% increase. That was my only other comment.
All right, any other questions about checks and warrants?
I'll make a motion.
Okay.
I move approval of expenditures for the month of December 2020 in the amount of $1,518,504.81 and authorize the transfer of $1,250,000 from the TCB General Fund to the TCB Accounts Payable and Payroll Fund for the payment of regular operating expenses.
On second, the first and second. Any questions or comments?
Nothing.
Thank you. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
We've included consumption reports. I'll come back to that in a second. Let me just go ahead and work through the rest of these items on my transmittal memo. We're changing the way we're processing pants and boots allowances, which are in the various memorandum of understandings with our IBEW employees. This will simplify and speed up the process for these reimbursements, decrease or eliminate some of the paperwork that we've been historically maintaining. So I'm just noting that with you folks. Audit work has begun. Water division inventory was completed earlier this month as of, with the record then, therefore, as of December 31st. Art helped out as this was conducted remotely. It had its ups and downs, but the work got done completed, was adequately completed, actually, and then with no discrepancies. So auditor phoned it in. We had a video going with a phone, and we just counted off of a sheet that we had completed and a spreadsheet that sent down to the auditor as well at the same time. And was able to, they chose 20, 25 items, verified the count, and as I indicated, or as I mentioned, it was a clean report for that. So that was a good thing. Budget is up and was adopted, of course, and has been put to the website. And then each of you have your envelopes with your Form 700s. Need to have those completed and returned by before April 1st. Also included in your envelope is a copy of your prior year submittal. So if that helps you out with that. I've got a number of attachments. Let me just go ahead and work through those real quickly and answer any questions you might have. The consumption reports, pages 1 through 6, are interesting. We used to run these out for you every month. We were just doing it once or twice a year now, but it does give you a background or a little bit of a chance to observe how the consumption and the revenues are coming in. These are were based on billing amounts, so they could be adjusted as we get into seeing what the final numbers are, and we'll be analyzing that, but I wanted to get these out to you as soon as we could do that. Consumption this year, 2020, compared to 2019. Miners ran the treatment plant, of course, is our big activity there in terms of water use. That went up quite a bit. It was, as at least compared with the prior year, it was 15% growth. But in my world, even better, the revenue grew almost 19 to 20%, or it was 19 to 20%. So that helps our cause. And you can kind of see top graph, the chart is the volume or the use consumption, and then the revenue side, the graphs, the 2020 line is a little bit above what it has been in prior years, even though the consumption didn't, or the volume of water used didn't quite grow quite as much. But if you recall, it was a year ago, January 2020, we're now January 2021. January 2020 is when we made that rate adjustment to the base fee. And so that's reflected as it came through and helped us out. Moving on to page 7 is our power, hydropower generation. January through December. December, you can see we're less than average, less than what we've historically received in terms of revenue, much significantly less than 2020 as compared to 2019. But still, December is a good month for us. It was the second highest month in 2020 in terms of receipts, just slightly under $1.5 million, and that money came in on Monday, just yesterday. So January will look like it's will be close to average if our numbers are the preliminary numbers look good. So it'll probably be better than what we saw last year. But then the next, you can see what happens in February or March. Those are should be big months, a chance to be big months. Some years they have been, and then other years they like last year. Was not a good year. So February, March, we'll want to keep an eye on and see what happens there. And I think Wraith and Dan could talk a little bit more about that. Moving on, there's our cumulative report by or my graph on page 8, and you can see 2020 is our record low. Not a record low, but it came in, it was lower than all the other 5 years recently that we've had come through. We then, in terms of the actual numbers, how they're coming through, just in general, these are still preliminary 2020 numbers. Of course, December 31st has passed, but we're still picking up all any revenues and expenses which were earned or received, or the goods and services received. We're still seeing some of those bills come through, and so we need to make those adjustments into December, as of December 31st. So these numbers are still preliminary at this time. Generally speaking, they're within budget, and they're lower than what we estimated for the this year. So that means starting in next year, we'll be able to start a little bit better than what our budget had, than what we built our budget on. But of course, we, if you recall, 2021 was going to be a very difficult year for us. So that's a quick rundown on where we are financially.
Thank you, Steve.
This is one of the more lighthearted ones that we get to present to you guys each year, but as the briefing stays, third annual Kids Cope Drive, so we kicked it off a little bit late, trying to make sure that events and different things had been basically reorganized as a result of COVID and would still be able to go on in terms of distribution, but happy to report to the board, thanks to our generous staff, employees year over year, 54 coats were completely gift wrapped and then later distributed to varying community services events through the Hope Center and Orville Rescue Mission. So just a picture there of the final efforts as they were on their way out the door. So just had to get that in front of the board.
Thank you, sir. Good to hear. Right, Dan,
I'll figure out. Okay. Hello, directors.
Yeah.
Thanks for your time. So I'd like to take a few minutes here and review the Power Division's monthly report for December 2020 with you. For starters, regarding operations, there's a few charts we'll look at here in the back of my report, our report, once we get a chance. So we will start seeing this DWR Bulletin 120 and Water Supply Index for reports for this year. Those are being published here next month. So I wanted to mention that that one of the measures that is called the Four Basin Index is actually currently showing a forecast of what appears to be a dry pattern, kind of a dry year. And so actually with those, the charts that are just the next, you put like the third page, this one here that shows the precip kind of patterns. And I ended up adding a little table to this, just kind of showing, you know, the years that kind of go along, you know. So 2020 was a dry pattern, was a DWR hydrology type dry, 19 was normal, 18 below normal, 17 was wet. So you kind of see what, kind of put a label to the actual quantity of water precipitation that took place, and 2021 is kind of shaping up to follow that dry pattern. That being said, we're very pleased that we have this next storms that are on the way. We have, you know, a precipitation forecast, we have, you know, rain forecast, snow forecast, wind warnings, freeze, a high, freeze warnings as well. So it's looking like we're getting some weather here, and with that we hope to get some storage, really do. As Steve mentioned, January revenue does look like an average, like a good average for this month. Based on the agreement that we have with PG&E, based on the purchase agreement and the amount of storage that we need to keep in our reservoirs, we are going to see, we're seeing less production, less run on our units. And so it kind of looks like there's a potential to have a February and March in 21 that may look similar to last year, unless we get some rain and some storage in the reservoirs. The good news is that we're getting snow, and snow is basically money in the bank. It's up there. It'll melt off later in the year. I just want to assure you, all of you, that our staff, our foreman, myself, we're operating the project to maximize the revenue out of the project. Of course, safety first, but we are operating to optimize, you know, the revenue. Currently, the storage in our two reservoirs, Little Grass and Sly, is 72,500 acre feet. You can see here on the bottom of the first page the asset performance. We did a little better with Woodleaf and Forbestown. Kelly tends to run many hours, and Sly ran less. So going to our next page, the table at the top. Just want to point out that the available for generation hours for December. Really good news for Woodley, Forbestown, and Kelly Ridge. The powerhouses were available the whole month, every hour of the month. Slycree Powerhouse had a couple of small forced outages happen, unfortunately. But we keep looking to see, we like to see on that column that's called generation dispatch at full output. We like to see that those numbers big, showing that we're running the units at full output, because that's where they're most efficient. So as you can see, Woodley and Forbestown didn't run for very many hours out of the month. As far as ISO, Kyle ISO index pricing, the on-peak average price was $42. That's higher than average of $39.76. The monthly hour average at $39.60 was higher than the average of $36.94. So the prices last month were the ISO prices were a little higher than the historical averages. That's good. I just want to make a comment here on the, again, looking at that, our charts here, if you go, if you look at the last, last page here, is, you know, TLS Steve did talk about this. If you maybe get a chance to review it after the meeting, again, you can see the lower right-hand corner of this, we'll see the revenues and the month-to-month, and it's, you know, it shows how January last year was good, and then, you know, February and March were not so great. So, again, we'll just track that here month-to-month, moving forward. Just talking about maintenance for a bit, we have all four powerhouses are fully operational. We have an outage schedule for Woodleaf next month, and a maintenance outage for Forbestown in March. And the Forbestown powerhouse, we're going to do some work on the stator installation. It is in need of some repair, and that's taking place. Other maintenance took place last month. We do our routine penstock inspections. We inspect project roadways, remove brush and debris. We, as you saw from the checks and warrants, we also clean intake screens and grizzlies. Of course, we have our ongoing maintenance of our facilities and our vehicles at our yard. No update on regulatory compliance for last month. Moving into projects. So we had some repairs that we did as a result of the North Complex fire, the 2020 fires. We replaced replaced these straw bales around the Forbestown Powerhouse penstock. These were burnt up. These hay bales are in place as a measure to prevent rock fall from contacting and damaging the penstock. So, we also have a request for bid that's going out for recoating of the damage to the paint, to the coating on the Forbestown Powerhouse penstock. It was scarred somewhat during the fires. And we're also getting quotations and procuring safety buoys and log booms for those that were damaged and destroyed at the South Fork Diversion Dam. And so, I think the order has just been placed for these, and we're just negotiating the shipment, which due to COVID, the shipment has been quite slow, unfortunately. There's some good news here. We have a standby generator that we're installing at Slide Creek Dam. So we have a spillway there, and it requires power to operate, and that power up there typically fails when we have storms up there. The elevation is around 3,500 feet, and the power there has had issues of reliability during the winter months, but we have a standby generator there that we're installing, that our crew are installing, and we're very pleased that that's getting done. Finally, under personnel, I mentioned the group is very pleased that Steve Goff from the Water Division joined transferred to the utility worker position in the Power Division. Steve has a lot of great experience with equipment operation, with brushing and tree work, and working for tree contractors, and has a lot of good facility maintenance experience as well. So we're welcome him to our group. We're pleased to have him. And with that, that's the content that I have. I'd be happy to answer any questions.
No questions?
What good is
great.
I have a question.
Yeah.
If that's okay.
Of course.
The burn scar. Mm-hmm. I know we've had pretty cooperative weather so far, but have you seen anything, any debris info? Or?
There really hasn't been anything significant at this point. So we have a couple of spots in the project that are on watch, and but so far they have not been an issue. And we'll continue to watch those as well. So,
other questions? All right, thank you, Dan.
Thanks for your time.
Thank you, Dan.
Yeah, that's your report.
Okay, let's talk about Water Division and operations within Water Division, if I may. So for the treatment facilities, Miners Ranch Treatment Plant, as you might expect, our treatment production started decreasing as we move into the winter months. So we produced 90.6 million gallons roughly for the month of December. Bangor Treatment Plant, the same thing, a sharp drop off there. Only 298,000 gallons were actually produced during the month of December. all of our compliance and bacteriological requirements and everything were still in good shape, and so we're good there. One note is the Miners Ranch production, however, continues to maintain about 117% of average over the past 5 years, which means that while it's in incremental steps, we are adding users and consumption into that system, which is a good thing because we all know we've got a heavy investment into that process. And Bangor treatment plant is about 102%, so a modest increase over the past 5 years. You can see the trend for fiscal year 2020. So you can see January of last year was there below 100 million gallons for the month, and then we ended in December 90.6, with a peak somewhere around 200 plus million gallons during the summer months in terms of treatment. PG&E true-ups. We haven't spoken to the solar array system or the solar farm at the treatment plant in a while, so I thought for the year closeout we would talk a little bit about that. As you know, we had inverter trouble over a previous number of months. Board approved replacement of those inverters. I'm happy to report that we're seeing the benefits immediately from that. So what you see on this trended chart is true-up costs by month. So what that means is how much electricity are we actually using or pulling from PG&E on the grid that is not offset by the solar system to operate our expanded treatment facilities. And you can see those costs have started to decline as a result of the inverter replacements. So if we continue on this path, that investment will have a return of less than 5 months. We'll be back in a good state. So eager to continue to monitor that and report back. On the next page, let's talk about the back half of December and up to this point in January within operations and water division. As you know, this time of the year, big focus is around preparation of our water conveyance system as we start to move into our next irrigation season. And so we haven't been short of that activity. You can see under the heading of irrigation maintenance, the particular areas, if you're interested, if you have constituents or you represent a certain district, what areas we've been working out specific to your neighbors as far as irrigation maintenance. I will tell you, Miller Hill, that was the one that was a struggle for us last year. If you recall, we were driving water out of WD6 off of the Forbestown ditch at 11 cubic feet per second. Historically, we like to try to only draw around 8 cubic feet per second or slightly less. And we struggled and struggled last year with water loss in some of those areas. We have identified 3 key areas that are on repair through our maintenance efforts this year. Now we're targeting to make corrections with those 3 spots in anticipation as we go into this year's irrigation season. We won't have to draw at such a high level. So we've managed to find those spots and we're correcting them. The rest, as you look across the chart, you can see the other types of activities that the crew performed up to this point, with whether it's repairing services, work on the community line, leak repairs, etc. Gives you an idea, we're kind of all across the district on varying topics. The other thing to report is we did perform our annual physical inventory. So this is the on-hand inventory that we hold in order to maintain repairs and unforecasted events throughout the year. Through a couple of reconciliations, I'm happy to report that the Water Division team were able to true that up. And I think we ended up at about a negative $6,900 balance when it was all said and done from reconciliation. So not too bad based on the inventory on hand. Certainly wanted to send a thank you out to the warehouse technician, Don Cook. She's the one that that attempts to monitor and manage that inventory in and out throughout the year. As you know, with a lot of hands and on-call work in the middle of the night and weekends, et cetera, that can be quite a challenge. So to finally get it to that close to zero is a pretty big accomplishment. I wanted to say thank you there. Questions or comments around Water Division operations, what we've been up to since the last board meeting? All right, community investment programs. This is a continuation of updates on the Bangor raw water delivery system. So we have now ordered the raw water pumps, controls, filters, and any ancillary hardware. So all that's either been on order or is received. The team is working on the pad and location within the Bangor treatment plant facility inside the fenced area where we will house these components and put a cover over those and then fire that system up. So you can see in the graphical, if you're interested, this continuation, we basically have a 6-inch intake we've tapped into from the open conveyance ditch system, the canal. We've ran about 2,900 foot of pipe, 6-inch diameter pipe. That's been done for quite some time under the ground. In fact, you don't even realize it's there. We just did that last season. Like I said, the main pumps, the jockey pumps, the filters, the variable frequency drive equipment, that'll all be mounted where the white dotted line arrow will go, right in front of the Bangor treatment plant. Electrical is going to be 243 phase, and then we'll begin discharging 120 gallons per minute at 40 PSI with about a 90-foot elevation rise at the corner of Oral Bangor Highway and Avocado Road. And so we expect all of this to be in place and charged and ready to go prior to this year's irrigation season. Again, as a reminder, we have 9 applications for service that have been signed and agreed, so we'll continue to collect the funds on those as we install the meters at that location, and then landowners will be able to tie in and we'll go from there. So a little bit of work still left on the other end, but not large in scope. Highway 162, Caltrans. As you know, this has been quite a conversation with Caltrans and the utility district on cost and effort, etc. What I can tell you is Caltrans has determined that South Feather is 100% liable for the costs associated with this infrastructure work. What that means is we as a district have been unsuccessful to this point in demonstrating any type of county recorded maps or documentation that shows that we have physical infrastructure. OWID, pre-South Feather, had physical infrastructure there prior to the construction of 162, i.e. Hall of Highway. We have meeting minutes that speak to that from 1945. We have varying maps that show pipes and conveyance and ditches and components there, but nothing that's actually official stamped for the county. We have an additional 90 days to prove otherwise, so we'll continue one last round of trying to find something otherwise. We're in the phase of execution to this project. South Feather has broken our responsibilities down into 3 phases. We call that Arbol Avenue and Highway 162 crossing. Phase 2 is 162, which is an east service line to go back up and feed Orville Christian School and 2 residences there, and then remove any legacy abandoned pipes that have been under the roadway or on the embankments for some time that are actually not in use. Now, we may not perform these phases in the sequence that are listed there. It's just going to be opportunistic between when is a good available time to perform that. The total estimated cost, so this is hard cost for components. These are outside services, things like traffic control, lighting if necessary for night work, those types of things. And then labor and overhead are all built into an estimated $136,900. A large portion of that with labor and overhead is a sunken cost, whether we're working on this project or another, so that's already built into the budget. The other items we're still trying to work down, with the biggest one being traffic control and those types of hard costs that we have to sub out. So we're working both with Caltrans and their other subs that are working on this project to see if we cannot piggyback and use their traffic control. That alone would save us $25,000, $26,000. So it's all about timing and sequencing, which is why our phases may not be in that exact order. If we have an opportunity to use someone else's crew that's out there to handle traffic control within that area, then we will do that and execute our work program. I would say that Arbol Avenue, Highway 162 crossing, is the biggest challenge for us. The pipes are very deep, there's some timing and some work around gas lines of PG&E, and at one spot it'll require shoring because our pipes are is down 8 feet. And so we need to shore up if we're going to be down in there trenching and doing that work. All manageable, we have a plan. The plan's been stamped and approved by Caltrans. It's just a matter of managing through it. Technically, we do not have to start our work until August of this year. So August 15th through, I think, September 15th is kind of the time frame. Mm-hmm. We're not going to wait. As construction starts out there via Caltrans, we're going to jump in where we can and get what we can get done with their resources out there. We'll just update you as we move along. Okay. All right. Any questions or comments on that?
Yeah, I think that's right. Do your underground at the same time they're moving all the dirt.
Yeah.
And then you got it.
Yeah. Their elevation grades are going to create some challenges, so we'll probably have to do it in a few little small steps, but I agree. You know, we want to tag along behind there and get that done as we move.
Yeah, we've got to work together. have a good project.
Yeah, yeah. It certainly brings up a bigger conversation for us to understand, and that is, capital improvement costs that aren't directly tied to the ratepayers of this district, right? So while, some of us live and take advantage of this 162 and the widening project, arguably the costs absorbed by our ratepayers, there's not a direct benefit if you're a domestic water user, irrigation water users, there's a traffic benefit, but that's only a small portion of our district. So we need to be continuing to think about as these larger long-term projects surface that the state is driving, if we don't, potentially send out Prop 218 notifications and see if we can't have a surcharge to help support and offset those costs that are project specific, if we're not able to receive support from the state on funding. All right, the next one is the Wyandotte Miners Ranch Road Community Line. So we're back on that project. As you know, we had performed the intertie work and had done all that last season. Now we're trying to manage through the weather that's coming up, and we want to get that project completed as soon as possible. So we've saw cut across the road. We'll be prepared to start laying more pipe and start getting connections hooked up here over the next month or two. So we're looking forward to getting that one checked off the list and out of the way as well. That's it on operations. Let's talk about North Eagle Water District and the Joint Facilities Operating Fund Financial Audit. As you know, we've been through a series of revisions and communications in regards to the 2005 agreement between South Feather and North Yuba. As I spoke on December 15th's board meeting, we were working, engaged in creating a mutual agreement for auditors on behalf of, forensic auditors on behalf of North Yuba Water District to come to South Feather and extract data specific to the Joint Facilities Operating Fund. As I wrote this update for the today's meeting, you'll see that I said that we fully expected to report that that physical audit had at least been completed, and then it would be in the next phase of analysis and Q&A of the information. As I wrote this, that had not taken place, but what I said is that we were committed to make ourselves available to get that process and keep that moving and get it done. I'm happy to report that through communications late Friday night, so council and I received communications in regards to the audit and language. North Yuba had changed councils, so the one we started with and we were working with trying to get this done, they shifted from that attorney to a new attorney. We received a letter from that attorney, and we responded to that and said, have your auditors here on Monday morning. They complied, and that's what took place. So yesterday, we scrambled and made that happen, and so auditors from Crow, a limited liability partnership out of Sacramento, arrived. We met with them, and so finance manager, myself as general manager, and information systems, we participated in this room and provided and extracted. They drove some of the time or asked for the content. We provided all requested information, and they left the facility with that information. So the next steps will be to start analyzing that, and hopefully we'll be able to address any concerns there may be with that data. So at least that's moving. Questions or comments there? All right. Public relations. So this one might take a few moments. We had a landowner that has approximately 500 acres on multiple parcels contact the agency, and this property is in the area called Monte de Oro, and that's actually on the north side, over past Lake Oroville and the dam up on the hillside over here. That we own a 14.6 acre piece of property up on the top of the mountainside there, and we house a reflector panel, so basically a large reflector billboard that is part of our microwave communication, so we can actually have comms through our South Fork Power Project with all the powerhouses, et cetera, and Forestown headquarters, and those items. That property has basically been untouched. We perform an annual inspection. Oh, I shouldn't say annual inspection. We perform an inspection probably every 3 years to go up there. It's just a big metal billboard. This landowner had reached out and had requested that the district fence or refence a portion of that property. And so we've been engaged with this landowner trying to understand why, what's changed over time, etc. I should note that this landowner has owned that land within their family for about 165 years. But what has happened is property owners both north and south of their property and South Feather's piece have changed ownership here over the last year. So those properties have sold and changed ownership. That has resulted in a fair amount of activity and cattle moving through, and there's some other activities that are taking place. Looks like there's some future farming that's happening, and there's some water draws, cross boundaries, etc. So that's why they're asking you as a board if you would consider South Feather participating in any type of help on fencing. What you see in my map, really the western boundary of that property. What I will tell you is this is not trivial in nature. So Dan Leone and I had our communication technician and maintenance foreman take us to this location the last month. And we hiked this, and this was a vertical grade up, I'd say about a 1,500 foot elevation hike. Lava rock cut with a mix of loose red rock and very, very rough terrain, very wooded. So not easy to do.
Yeah.
So you had that much elevation in just 14.6 acres?
Yeah, isn't that crazy? Well, let me back up. Not just 14.6 acres. The access to get there, you have to work into private landowner property. You just can't drive to the base of our property. You have to start hiking almost at the grade of the diversion pool.
How close did the fire get to that last year?
We looked at that. That's a good question. On the east side, we would estimate 500 yards, maybe 800 yards. So the burn scar got pretty close, but didn't make it up that hillside. But to answer your question, Director Hickman, you have quite a hike to actually get to the corner boundary of our property. So basically, from water elevation, the diversion pool, up to the top of the mountain is where our property's at. Because we're wanting the highest peak for that reflector, so I'm assuming why it's there.
And then they're asking for us to pay for all the fencing on this boundary, or the traditional half for each landowner?
Excellent question. So it started off with, would you please fence your property? As we've met with them, walked the property, I've done a follow-up meeting. They're asking if we would participate in any way, shape, or form. I explained, you know, challenges from a public agency. One, for us, we're not terribly concerned about what's happening on that property, right, other than potentially a liability issue, but all we have there is this reflector. They've asked if we'd consider participating with either sweat equity and labor or the contract for someone to help with the fencing or materials towards the fencing. This would be 4-strand barbed wire and metal stakes, so not chain link or anything highly expensive. What I will tell you is their experience, as you look at this map, the south section at the very bottom, the blue line, they have already fenced that with an adjoining neighbor, and the costs to fence that with 4-strand barbed wire and posts and subbing that out was about $3,500. So if you extrapolated that with the uphill terrain and the rock, you're probably you're probably in the $15,000 range to do that. Material-wise, probably not real expensive for spools of barbed wire and posts. It's the labor that's going to get you in that terrain.
You're going to have trying to get those posts into that rock.
That's right.
Have a rock drill.
Yep. And I explained, as a public agency, we have 3-bid process. You know, this is ratepayers' money, etc. So, you know, they may be better off, you know, finding labor to do something like that. And, you know, potentially South Philly would consider some support and hard costs of materials. But I would take that and try to get some general direction from the board if you want us to pursue that in cost, schedule, and performance or not. Yeah. And so it's really an information item today. I'm not asking you to approve for us to go. I'm just looking for feedback today.
I had a pet contractor come out to our place last year. I was going to do some fencing, but COVID hit, everything went crazy. He's the actual guy that did all the fencing around Las Plumas High School. So I called him today with this item and told him he said he'd be interested because he's local, he's got all the tools, and then maybe I could get him to fence our property after he's done or in the process.
Well, so in the process where he worked as an actor, board director,
talk to him.
We could certainly include him on a solicitation for bid if we get to that point, for sure.
He's local. He says he likes to do work here locally.
Yep.
Instead of going away.
Okay. Thank you for the input. So, From the Q&A today, I'm just looking for some direction. You want me to pursue this and see what costs would be and then those types of things to present back to the board? Or
real quick, Ray, how many feet is this?
So this is estimated to probably be somewhere around, so I walked it off with Dan. I didn't bring a laser measure with me, and I was trying to look at the boundaries. I would say this is 3/4 of a mile, so probably about 3,000, 3,200 feet.
So it'd be 12 rows of barbed wire?
Yeah, roughly.
To roll with that.
But yeah, and then what do you do? I'm not a fencing expert. I don't know, what do you go, 6 foot on center with the post?
You could get away with 10 feet.
10, yeah.
10. Hardship's going to be with a rabbit in my place in paradise. You can't drive fence doors. Sometimes you got to drill all the holes.
Yeah, yeah. And that wouldn't surprise me. And this is rocky hunting.
You're on top of the hill.
Why do they want this fence?
So it started off with people are stealing water to other parcels that are traveling through portions of our property. There's cattle that's migrating through our property onto their property. So it's going across boundaries. And then there was a claim of illegal poaching on South Heather property. I saw no evidence of that. I did walk a large portion of this property, even with the terrain, saw no evidence of human beings and poaching, shell casings or, animal scat or footprints or garbage or anything like that. So I would say poaching is probably a low probability on this property, but those were the initial reasons. So cattle movement through there, water being transferred across multiple parcels to feed other properties, and then poaching.
So 12 rows of barbed wire, 350 T-posts, so you're looking at about $3,000 in material. Tractor supply. Last time I checked.
How many posts?
350? 350 T posts.
Okay.
And then 12 rolls of wire. You're looking at what? 1,200 foot a roll. And you got basically 4 strands. So roughly 12 rolls total on that, right? Just rough math here. So roughly 3,000, say $3,500 in materials.
How difficult is it for me to get all that stuff up there?
It's accessible with an off-highway vehicle. So, well, not the route we went. So the route we use and have approval to get to our reflector is different than the route when I met with the 500-acre landowners who have a different way in on their property. From their side of the property, you can get within a few hundred feet, probably, of where the fencing would go in by a quad or some sort of side-by-side.
So clearly labor is the wild part here.
I would think so. And I would tell you, for us, we have greater restrictions on the use of subbing and those costs, et cetera, than what a private landowner would have, right? So
age.
Right. Exactly right.
So as an agency, could we just, without going through too much process, could we just donate the materials?
Yeah, I'd want to look at that. When you get into public-private partnership on projects like that, you may nonetheless have a prevailing wage issue.
So even if we stayed out of the wage side and said we just want to donate materials?
Yeah. I'd want to look at it before I answer definitively.
Because at this point, we could just say we don't want to do anything. We could
This item is not agendized.
Yeah,
we're not taking any action.
Right.
I get that. I'm just throwing out hypotheticals. If we were to participate, if we were to do something, how do we do something and yet control our costs and stay out of the potential drama side of this with labor and issues?
Doing the donation part, we have a locked in number at the beginning. Labor's going to vary. Each person's going to go look at it, see how you're going to get the holes and keep those.
What it does potentially open up, or any of our other 60 or so assets that we have that aren't currently secured, most are, right? Because we secure anything that has an asset that is subject to any type of damage or theft, but it could open us up on any other properties that may not have a fence line as well. So just think about that some. So
Mr. Reed, there for Dustin, what's the legalities of needing a fence on a piece of property?
I'm not aware of any requirement. Or legal theory.
Basically, neighborly in a sense?
I think that's basically what.
Like I said, most district properties we have, they are fenced and secured one way or another, mostly with chain link, but it's because we have specific assets or a waterway there and we want that off. This is unique because it's not even within the SERV district. It's a piece of property we own. It's outside of our sphere of influence, really. Yeah. It's just a piece of property we happen to own, so we can have micro communications off of a reflector.
So Dustin, could you do a bit of homework on that and find out your opinion on whether or not we've got any material on that?
Yes.
And we'll look at that next month.
And then rate risk of vandalism, theft, anything to that reflector? I mean, nothing's happened to this point, right?
Well, we witnessed what I would consider minor vandalism. So there were one or two bullet holes in the reflector, but my gosh, as I looked at them, one was a large caliber, one was a small caliber. Large caliber probably came from a whole other hillside, right? It was probably a 500-yard shot or more. And then the grounding cables to the four legs of the reflector were cut and removed. So someone probably removed the aluminum grounding cables, thinking they had valuable copper. Or realized they looked up on Google what the value of aluminum was and didn't want to carry it back down that hillside. So we're going to reconnect the grounding. You know, we're going to get back up and reconnect those to the four posts. Neither of the items I just described I would deem as major vandalism.
And does a reflector still work with a graffiti mural on it?
With
a graffiti mural, will it still function?
It's a grounded metal plane, and it'll function with coating on it.
So it could have a full graffiti mural and still work for us?
Most likely, yes.
Okay. Art, did you have a question? Dr. Flora, I have a question about the auditor.
Oh, I'm sorry. Yes, may we go back to the North Yuba Water District?
Sure.
Item. Yes, Dr. Flora? Can you hear me?
Yes.
You may be on mute or your volume's down low.
Hang on.
There you go.
There you go.
Okay, I think we can hear you, Dr. Flora. Well, we could. Did we lose you? Yes, I answered your question. Well, can we come back to it now? Should we connect? Oh. It appears you're...
I'm sorry.
Okay.
I apologize. I had to call in because I lost you, and then... Anyways, I'm back now. Quick question around the JFOP audit item that you were just discussing. I had a couple of quick questions, if you don't mind. Does South Feather send quarterly reports to North Yuba Water District relative to the JFOP?
We do not send a specific quarterly report. What we do is we utilize the published checks and warrants and the P&L general ledger in the monthly board report as that mechanism.
And that's been agreed to for 10 years now.
Right. Could you hear me, Dr. Flora?
She's muted.
Oh. Yeah, I keep getting muted. Yes, I did hear you. So I guess the question I have for you, I'm wondering what information is North Yuba Water District asking for that is not contained in this information that South Feather provides to us on a regular basis?
Yeah, so as you look at a board packet, if you start with checks and warrants, you know, that's a very detailed itemization, and there's a cost code or department code listed with our checks and warrants. One of the things that they're looking for is to isolate and verify, as we have a department code on there, can we demonstrate that those expenses truly do go to the Joint Facilities Operating Fund? So that's one of the things we're looking for is, you know, kind of peel back the layers within checks and warrants on the general ledger. The second would be the P&L that the finance manager reports each month in this packet is itemized details. So if we have, you know, a compliance cost listed and tracking throughout the fiscal months,
compared to the previous years. They're looking for the records to support from an accounts receivable and accounts payable standpoint, those invoices, and that they show objective evidence that they are indeed supporting the South Fork Power Project and Joint Facilities Operating Fund. So
okay.
it's in-depth forensics of those. Yep.
I'm sorry. Are they wanting to go all the way back into infinity or the last 2 years?
No, from the time of implementation of the 2005 agreement, which started in 2010, so 2010 to date.
So does that include even to the level of demanding timesheets?
Yeah, so, you know, the previous two versions through the Public Records Act, that content was provided on timesheets, so that information had already been provided some months back in hard copies as were produced. Through this process, through this third round of auditing, that was a download from the district's payroll system, ADP, that then goes into our business suite, Springbrook. So yes, they downloaded all payroll activity, allocations by employee, etc. So have all that content specific to JFOB.
Okay, so if this ends up where North Yuba Water District actually owes you South Center money, what will happen from there? And the other thing I'm curious about is, could North Yuba Water District point to any errors and use that as a way to break the contract?
So to answer your first question, based on the output of results, that regardless of what those results are, that would establish, you know, per the contract, a meet and confer process to determine remedy, whatever remedy may be. And that's an open term at this point. So we won't get too far ahead of ourselves on those results until findings are produced and validated or invalidated. Now your second question was, would that then lead to the potential, if there were findings, a break in the contract? Again, too early and completely speculatory. We will take this step by step and see where the data and the results move us to. But that would all have to go through a meet and confer process initially. Per the contract.
Do you have any idea how long this process is going to take?
I would imagine that the results of the data extracted yesterday by Crow will not take long. You know, a good forensic auditing team can compile that data, run it through their analytics, and then provide feedback. You know, there was no communication on time frame, but I would imagine they would be eager to get that information in front of their client. So I would say that would happen within weeks, if I was to guess. Typically it can.
Thank you so much for your candidness and your transparency. I really appreciate the information.
You're very welcome. Thank you. Okay, and then back on the public relations one. So it sounds like the board has requested Council Cooper to do a brief review on cans and cannots or some complexities with that type of activity. And then what you're telling me is it's not entirely out of the question at this point. We just want to continue to think through this a little bit and get a better understanding. Okay. That's the end of my staff report. Any additional questions? Any other questions or comments from the public while I'm at the podium? Thank you.
Charles Sharp is asking.
Oh, I'm sorry, Mr. Sharp. You're on mute, sir.
Hello, can you hear me?
Yes, we can.
So, the Slate Creek Power Tunnel is closed, that's correct?
Correct, yes.
That is correct.
So, all the water from Slate Creek is now following its natural path into the Bonus Bar Reservoir, is that correct?
I'm not clear past our Slate Creek Diversion Dam, I'm not 100% clear
the entire conveyance path beyond the South Feather portion of that diversion dam. I assume that to be correct, Mr. Sharp, but I don't know if there are other diversions or, you know, anything beyond our area of responsibility. But yeah, none is moving through the tunnel. No water is moving through that tunnel.
You don't need the water at this point.
Well, there's also contractual agreements and ties to FERC license and et cetera about certain time periods of the year that we can move that water and then manage the elevation level at Sly Creek Reservoir. So we are not in a position to be able to draw that water right now.
All right. Thank you.
Thank you. All right. Thank you.
Let's go ahead and move into public comments.
Dr. Floor had a question.
Dr. Floor, did you have a question?
Unmute.
Was this a secondary? So this was a public participation?
This is public participation.
So Dr. Floor, you've raised your hand for public participation. You show unmute.
Charles Sharp also has a question. Shall we move on to him?
Sure. Let's go ahead and move on to Mr. Sharp. Mr. Sharp, public participation?
Yes. I would like to say that all you all do very much improved in what it has been. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Appreciate that.
I'm sorry. I'm getting water. I'm back. And I just wanted to, once again, I have said this many times. I want to repeat myself. I really want to thank this board. You guys are so great to watch in action. It's refreshing to see a board actually respecting people and answering questions and to see a general manager that is really taking care of his board and the water district and the customers, and I really appreciate that very much. I did also want to let you know, as a private citizen, that at the last board meeting at North Eagle Water District, a request was made to just simply put something on an agenda. The item under issue was to invite Mr. Mosley to North Eagle Water District for a discussion period, and the board refused to put that item on the agenda for discussion. So, unfortunately, it appears that North Eagle Water District individuals are still refusing to meet with South Feather and work with our partners.
Wow. We're available at any time, so thank you for your comment. So,
thank you, Dr. Floor. Any other comments?
Nothing so far.
Okay.
Thank you. Nothing in publications as of 3:09 p.m.
Okay. All right. Let's move forward on to informational items. Ford, Jamie, looks like this you.
Yeah. So this report's really just to true up from some of the participation that took place in the month of December, because we moved the meeting up a week for Christmas. We kind of missed the window of opportunity there, so again, just some true up. So what we have here is a quick recap from a December 2nd Beat Fire Safe Council annual summit that we participated in. It was a one-hour webinar. Went through a series of topics that were introduced by the council chairman, executive director, Butte County Development Services Director, CAL FIRE directly, and really primarily focused on post-fire restoration, now specific, of course, to the Camp Fire and North Complex event. And then just we'll quickly go down and highlight that we then participated on December 10th with a follow-up webinar hosted by California Department of Insurance. Previously, we had come to you guys with a recap back in October based off of that initial webinar that they held in regards to fire insurance and what the future was going to look like, kind of gave both parties a chance, parties being the insurance carriers themselves, and really in so many cases frustrated residents that were struggling to either financially afford or just with $1 million to throw at something, just ultimately even be able to find coverage outside of in the voluntary market. So if we go back up, really wanted to highlight some of the topics and general discussion that occurred in the Be Fire Safe Council Summit. And based off of the agenda that collectively staff and you as the board have been working on, and really felt like that may be a direction that we may want to kick off, but wanted to get you know, a little bit of dialogue back in front of you guys as we kick off a new year, and we go through, again, really these two presentations. The interesting part, if we flip back to the state, really a lot of construction material and hardening and climate change, risk modeling, so many of those things that when we really fundamentally sit back down and look at the agenda that we collectively have set forth and discussed and been pretty proud of, I think there's an opportunity for those types of mitigation efforts to get lost in the state process and become that little fish in a big pond. Where I think the Butte County Fire Safe Council, they've seemed to be a little more themed towards a lot of what we've talked about, including youth development and just general fuel reduction efforts, and all specific to a lot of the areas. So wanted to highlight two of those slides in your board packet here, one being the Eastern Foothills, that Mount Ida area. And then highlight some of their successes in that Forbestown area that we work with as well. So if we take a step back in history, we did the fuel reduction efforts up at the Lake Wyandotte area. That was really inspired by that neighborhood reaching out to us in the Hurlton area, recognizing that that was really their primary evacuation route in the event of a fire reaching that area. And they engaged with us. We were able to make good, get some areas cleaned up for that asset. So really both parties walked away pretty happy. The fire council had actually reached out to us, and as Steve and I had previously reported, financially wanted to try to make a match there. So we're out trying to see if that's still a feasible option. And obviously that work had been performed by the Sheriff's Department work crew, something we had also discussed and had been advocates of in the past as well. So in addition to, also brought in a list of the working partners through Fire Safe Council, and in looking at this list, these are a lot of folks that were already in regular communications with, whether it be the power project, whether it be just general agency operations. So looking at this list, you know, really a highlighted one for us will continue to be CAL FIRE and the idea that they set the precedence and they really fundamentally sent our priority of fuel reduction efforts and or any opportunity for improvements in water supply as it pertains to fire suppression. So again, collectively, when we look at both sides or we look at both avenues, you know, I think wildfire protection and general efforts will continue to be obviously state-funded, as it was clearly called out in the varying Senate bills and Assembly bills that we're continuing to learn about, and all of the publishing as the 2021 state budget has been released. But really, again, think that our work could belong just really in our own backyard. So I turn it over to you guys, see if that's something that you fundamentally could live with. If that's the case, we kind of extend ourselves out, have some talks, and see where we can basically get a seat at that table and try to continue and build on those efforts.
Sounds a good approach.
Okay.
Definitely.
Okay. All right. So again, fundamentally, it's that ISO rating that we want to continue to pay attention to as well. So that still holds a caveat in our efforts as we move forward. But again, the two principles of that is really the fire protection services, with a heavy weighted goal on that ISO rating, and then of course that water supply that we had previously discussed. But collectively, it seems like those two working in conjunction are going to be our best laid efforts. So, all right. Well, then my plan will be, collectively put some stuff together, reach back out to the Fire Safe Council and see where we fit into this process. Also wanted to highlight things like the CEQA for that 500 acres in the Mount Ida. You know, that's good initial work that they're out doing, and really the ability to exercise those types of resources and really be humbled by what our core competencies are known to be, so we can fit into that process.
Okay.
Okay.
Thanks, Jamie.
All right.
Appreciate the work.
Thank you, guys.
Okay. Tab 5 information item is to document our output from last month's business item, and this is around the 2021 committee assignments. So if you turn the page, you'll see what the board you identified, selected as you guys to be on which committee and the names of those committees. If you'd like individual copies of that, welcome, we'll provide those to you as well. So as it stands for 2021, Director Hickman and Director Wolburn will be the Budget, Finance, and Claims Committee. Personnel Committee will be Director Moreland, Director Starr. Policy and Contracts, Director Edwards, Director Starr. Strategic Vision and Community Relations, Director Wolburn, Director Hickman. And Director Wolburn will be the Chair for our Deferred Compensation Finance Committee. We've actually already exercised here in January one committee, so we exercised the Personnel Committee yesterday, and so both Director Mullen and Director Starr came in and participated in a ad hoc committee conversation yesterday, and the rest of you will hear more about that later today. Questions or comments on the committees?
Looks good.
Is that what we agreed to? All right. I'm sorry, Director, can we...
Very nice.
Okay. Tab 6. This is a very important information item, so I'm going to take a little bit of time and try to walk through this as clearly as possible and solicit any questions or comments as we move along. And so the purpose of this is to provide an update and status of South Feather Water and Power Agency's Power Purchase Agreement and that program. So a couple of reminders real quick. So, you know, we've been operating under a 10-year power purchase agreement with Pacific Gas and Electric. That 10-year, original 10-year agreement had expired on June 30th of 2020. Reminder, as a result of the Lake Orville Dam spillway failure that created a flood and triggered a force majeure on the Kelly Powerhouse within our purchase agreement. Currently, the PG&E Power Purchase Agreement, the PG&E is still operating all four of our assets under a force majeure clause or component within the original agreement. However, that's disputed, right? So the Kelly Powerhouse certainly did fall into clarity and language that falls into that extension as a result of the floods. The other three are currently being disputed but are being operated by Pacific Gas and Electric. But it highlights the importance of where we're going next. And so I want to walk through the work that particularly Dan Leon and I have done over quite some time and tell you where we're at this point, what you can expect next. So again, just a couple little highlights for those that may have forgotten or any public audience, etc. The hydro generation project is extremely important, not just to this agency, but to outliers as well. We obviously know that we need to maximize that project in order to support the operation itself within Power Division, both revenue and reserve requirements. But there's also a subsidized budget element that feeds into Water Division. And primarily, that is the Sly Creek Powerhouse. So the Sly Creek Powerhouse, which came on later in the South Fork Power Project, those revenues go straight to general fund and help offset the costs that our ratepayers pay for domestic and irrigation services within Water Division. So it's critically important. And then there's the contractual obligation to North Eagle Water District through the 2005 agreement, as well as the 1996 mutual aid agreement.
So there's a fair amount at stake in making sure we get this right and we continue to do the right things as we move forward with the project. The next slide you'll see is a reminder, you know, what are those revenue sources? So obviously the Power Division revenue for the Hydro Project maintains operations of not only Woodley, Forest Town, and Kelly, but also Sly over there in the Water Division revenue stream, and then provides supplemental revenue to North Yuba when there's net revenues, as well as reserve requirements, etc. What I want to highlight here is when you look at our source of funds, you know, the energy sales, and you really want to look at half of this pie chart, if you will, but 35% of our revenue sales on source of funds comes from energy, and only 15% is from traditional water. So it's a big contribution within the district and within the agency. More importantly is the next slide. It's how we use those funds and why the responsibility of what we're working on extends far beyond just South Feather. When you look at how those funds are used, whether it's salaries and benefits, it's supplies, capital projects, debt service, there's an element, and this is the North Yuba Water District component, and I think it's important for everyone to understand, you know, if we do our job, if I do my job correctly, and Dan and our staff, and we can execute, and we can maximize revenues, if you look at 2021 alone, if we execute in a perfect world for what we said we were going to do at the beginning of January, by the time we get to the end of December, that's revenue in, operation uptime, manage our expenses as we've communicated and committed to you. There's a net revenue distribution plus, you know, a $709,000 payment to North Yuba Water District. Well, that represents 89% approximately of their annual operating budget for the year. So, you know, we've got a lot of responsibility to keep this thing going and moving beyond just South Feather, but essentially funds a very large percentage or portion of their operation. So again, the overview slides, you can read those. I don't need to go through those. You can see in red, I did highlight and talk about we are currently being operated under the disputed force majeure on at least three of the four assets. So if you go to the next slide, under the CalISO slide, again, a reminder, what are we talking about here? So where I have the circle, you know, South Feather generates power, and then that's moved into the transmission system, but we need a buyer, right? And the buyer, you know, sells that and it moves through. So we have done a number of things, and we'll walk through those milestones and ancillary strategies here and bring you back up to speed where we're at. So what have we done? As we knew we were nearing the end of a 10-year agreement, we developed an overall strategy for power purchase agreement solicitation and origination. We'll talk about those in some upcoming slides. So we've checked that off. That's been completed. Through that process, we identified offtake opportunities. What does offtake mean? It means buyers. So we've checked that off. And then we've been assessing the South Fork Power Project's post PG&E 2020 operating options, so new PPA and force majeure impact. That's still in process. That's not checked off and completed. We have responded to power procurement solicitations, so that's done. We've met directly with certain off-takers based on feedback that we've had with those, so that's checked off. So where are we at? We still need to finalize and develop that overall post-2020 PPA, enter into new power purchase agreement negotiations with whoever we believe will be the right partner moving forward, and then make that physical transition. You go to the next slide, the very beginning of this, and you've seen this, it's been published in a previous board packet over a year ago. So who were our off-takers and what were those targets? So we had investor-owned utilities, municipal utilities, community choice ags, and direct access service providers. All have, through a SWOT analysis, strengths, weaknesses, opportunities, and threats. We had to vet through that process. As you all well know, you know, PG&E is an investor-owned utility. That's who we're currently operating under, so they're an IOU. As we worked through that journey and investigated options, and these are samplings of the type of people that fall in those categories, we went beyond that in some cases to a number of other potential buyers. That's the next slide. So I've circled some of them that were listed at the beginning. So we engaged and looked at potential buyers, everything from our current buyer, PG&E, to some municipals like NCPA and their affiliates, Silicon Valley Power, etc. We looked at community choice ags, whether it was Marine Clean Power, Silicon Valley again, etc. And we also looked at direct access folks like Three Phase, Shell Energy, etc. A total of 12 off-takers were fully evaluated and vetted through this process. If you go to the next slide, let's talk about the range of options that took place and what we learned through those categories, whether it's an investor-owned utility, a CCA, etc. There's really three different buyer type of options. You can go with 100% fixed pricing model, where you find a potential buyer that says, we'll guarantee you and we'll pay you this much annually. With that process, there's low risk, right? You have predictability on what that revenue is going to be for whatever that term, but it's also of low value. So you know, you're kind of on the low end of revenue generation through that fixed price model. We looked at fixed plus variable pricing. So depending on the percentage of fixed versus the percentage of variable, you can end up with moderate risk based on your hydrology, wet year versus a dry year. And then we looked at pure profit sharing, which is a high risk model, but can deliver very high returns. An example of that would be like a Shell Energy. If you looked at a pure profit sharing with a Shell Energy, you have the potential of some very high revenue years, but you also have the potential of very low years and not being able to pay our bills and manage our operations. So, you know, you have to balance that whole process. The terms, when we looked at the various offtake opportunities and those targets, ranged from 1 year terms to 20 year terms, right? So you can see a pretty big range there. And then if you kind of break it down to what you're probably most interested in, what are the potential revenue ranges? So depending on the moisture year, the hydrology year, and the annual megawatt hours produced, you know, what we'd consider a dry or low year, you know, we had solicitations as low as $7 million a year to a high of 20. And then on a wet year, a good wet year, you know, maybe like a 20, would that be a 2017? Would have been a good example of a wet year for a district. A low of 15 million and a high of 30 million, right? So these are all the things that we've been evaluating to bring to the board here in the upcoming month or months on recommendations as why we think we should, you know, consider certain options. So you can see it's a pretty wide variation of work that's gone into this process. So, you know, an extension of the valuation summary, some of the things that have to be done through the end of this current agreement is metering conversion. Dan speaks to that every month. You saw it again in checks and warrants when we talked about CAISO metering. So we've checked that off. We have line of sight. We're in implementation regardless. So operationally, we're all well on track there. Scheduling coordinator, this is going to be dependent on our next PPA buyer. So for example, if our next PPA buyer was Pacific Gas and Electric, we already have scheduling coordination taking place at the Fresno Operating Center, and so low risk for transition into a new PPA. If we go to a different buyer, then we have to manage schedule coordination. We've been working through those options and what that means to the district. And then also there's SCADA communications requirements, regardless of how we go, and so we've been working on that as well to update. And this gives you an idea, when we talk about SCADA, what a screen would look like, so you have a pulse of your powerhouse and the system, what's going on there. So what are the next steps on the final page? We need to conduct the formal mediation and or arbitration process with PG&E on the force majeure for the upper three powerhouses. We have determined a short list of energy buyers, which we'll be presenting to you shortly, so that's checked off. We need to review the PPA contract language with agency counsel before we put that maybe in front of you one more round, so the council has an opportunity to communicate and provide direction to you for risk or non-risk based on PPA languages. And then we'll present a recommendation to you as a board for approval that will come from Dan and myself, and then implement the new power purchase agreement. What I will tell you is right now we are shortlist. We are down to two, maximum of three potential buyers, and so we have a little bit of work left to do, and we think we would be putting in front of the board one or two potential buyers with our recommendation on one targeted one and allow you the opportunity to challenge us. Make sure that's a good decision or not. Okay? So I would expect at February's board meeting, 1 month from now, what I would expect between now and then is we have some power purchase agreement language in front of council to review, make some comments on. I would expect an update on timing of mediation, arbitration, and PG&E's either change or stance on a future power purchase agreement, what that would look like, and then we'd be bringing to the board where we'd like to go, seeking adoption approval by March's board meeting. I know I just said a lot. Hopefully you followed me through that process. If you, you know, please, that's why it's in print here. Session, take notes. If you have questions as we go into next month's board meeting, let's certainly, you know, challenge and talk to us about that as we continue on. But hopefully this gives you a line of sight of where we've been, where we're going, where we're at. Okay, thank you.
And we're going to be okay on the power lines, I believe?
Yeah, so the transmission system, Director Starr's question, so power lines, that's a separate transmission contract and agreement. Those are evergreen agreements, so those would continue as written.
Okay.
Yeah. Yes. Good question, though. Thank you for asking. All right.
Public.
Any questions or comments from public? How about email?
Nothing in the email as of 3/31.
Dr. Floor has a question.
Okay. Dr. Floor, you have a question in regards to...
I do, thank you. I was just wondering, how flexible is the language in power purchase agreements? Are you able to, for example, with the fires that we have been having and expect to continue having over the coming years, and the impact that had on your powerhouses, is there any way to include language in your power purchase agreement, some way to mitigate for those situations? Because it seems to me it costs Southwestern a ton of money with the powerhouses being down. So I'm wondering if there's a way to address that.
Yeah, that's an excellent question. You know, that's the fun thing about history, right? It's an excellent teacher. So what we didn't know or foresee with the origination of the previous 10-year contract, we've learned a lot over the, you know, the climate and everything that's taken place over the last. So the short answer is yes. So those folks that we've been interfacing with, and from the very beginning, we've had language and expectations and protections that were really fair to both buyer and seller, but not what I would consider heavily weighted towards buyer versus seller. That actual topic and the question you're asking is actually what assisted in vetting down a larger pool of potential targets down to a small few. So yes, the short answer is yes. All of that is expected and is being planted within a future power purchase agreement. I know that's kind of open-ended. I don't know if you're looking for specific details, but that's exactly what we're trying to manage. And that ties into utilization and uptime, right? So we have a responsibility to maintain uptime, but you can put in things like natural disasters and even pandemic, right? We would have never thought when we started this process that we'd have language in a new PPA that lists pandemic, but we do now, right? And so those are the types of topics that will be built in.
My other question is, I know there was some discussion sometime in the past on South Center sort of going diversifying more and potentially looking at other forms of operation besides just hydropower generation. I was wondering, are those discussions still going on, or have you taken those off the table now?
Yeah, I would say as an agency, nothing is off the table. We will always explore, and this is part of the committee assignments of the directors, will always explore opportunities. I think you may be referring to a fair amount of public content we used to receive on various options. And so we've continued to look at, you know, storage, both in the form of fuel, i.e. water, as well as electric generation and distribution. Everything is always on the table to be analyzed. So feasibility will take place on every topic. And the strategic vision committee makes sure that we're doing that, actually. So, does that answer your question?
Yeah, thank you. It's so lovely to get an answer to a question. It's wonderful. Thank you.
Thank you. Any other questions specific to this tab?
No.
So Ray, this 89% of New York's operating budget, that's just fascinating to me. I mean, we're providing them 89% of their annual operating budget, and they're taking, let me get this straight, just clarify for me, they're taking no risk, they're doing no work, they're just collecting that money from us. We're taking all the risk, we're doing all the work, and we're giving them 89% of their annual operating budget?
Yeah, so short answer is yes, but let me qualify and make sure we're very clear. So when I refer to that 89%, again, what I'm talking about is 2021 forecasted budget. So if we execute, we bring in the gross revenue we say we're going to bring, we manage expenses to the very end, in a perfect world, we execute that budget, and you look at the North Yuba Water District's adopted budget, then yes, the funds that we would transfer both with the $709,000, the quarterly distributions that equals $709,000 plus forecasted net revenues, if we executed, that sum would essentially populate and control about 89% of their budget for this year. Now remember, that could go from 0% contribution all the way to, you know, 200% or three times their budget depending on the year. For example, let's say we received revenue this year of $25 million. You know, some miracle happened, right? And the prices were high with all that money. We would potentially have a net revenue distribution in North Yuba that maybe would fund 2 or 3 years of their operating budget. So it's zero to infinity, really. Based
well, not
but it's a responsibility. But we have a heavy responsibility for both districts. Now, the second part of your question is on the surface, you know, what today is North Yuba Water District doing to contribute to that revenue and the receipt of that revenue? I would argue really nothing today, but this is an agreement that went way, you know, years way back through disputes on that whole South Fork Power Project, long before any of us were in this boardroom or met, right? So that is an output that was created and started so many years ago. We just happen to be living and managing through it today. But yes, your question is correct.
All right, two questions. One, Dr. Floor has an additional one, and Charles Sharp has one.
Mr. Sharp, would you like to go first this time? We'll let Dr. Floor go after you.
Yes, thank you very much. This graph we did, so you're providing this amount of money, or more or less, to the water district and have been today, is that correct?
No, it'll vary from fiscal year to fiscal year. So, for example, on a close of a fiscal year, if South Feather does not generate net revenues above operating costs, then there's no distribution in North Yuba. So, in years like that, where there's no net revenue distribution, the percentage of commitment or money to North Yuba is only that $709,000. So then it would be a lower percentage.
But have you been paying that $790,000?
Yes, sir.
All right. And then, so kind of depending on the weather.
Yeah. Well, revenue, you know, hydrology, yes. Hydrology is heavily driven by weather, right? So the more water we have, the more that's able to move through the project. That's one piece. The other piece then becomes the value of that energy, even with all that water, to the grid, right? What's the demand? It's all about supply versus demand within both micro and macroeconomics, right? So there's multiple factors. We could move water, have lots of water, be moving it through, but if the value of the energy, if there's low demand in the state of California, particularly Northern California, then the values are lower and your revenue could be lower, right? If it was gray and cloudy every day and rained for 300 days this year, the value per megawatt hour would be lower, right? Less you know, demand on air conditioning systems, things like that.
But less solar.
Solar.
So the graphic is really to illustrate how much of the income you could be providing to the North Yuba Water District.
Yeah, right, and that's what I'm trying to highlight in this information item is the responsibility and the lift for South Feather to make sure we perform a proper vetting job, do a good job with our next power purchase agreement. The responsibilities extend beyond South Feather, right? We have a responsibility and a burden to make sure that we're also doing the right thing and maximizing revenues to a neighboring district, contractually.
Oh, I wish you wouldn't do that.
Well, but so that's the point. That's the point of this, right? So our work, our efforts to maximize revenue benefits those beyond just who's sitting in this boardroom. And so there's a level of importance that extends beyond us.
Okay, thank you.
And we take that seriously.
Yes, thank you.
Thank you. Dr. Floor.
Thank you. I understand what you're saying, Manager Mosley. You know, good parents take care of their little, their dependent children. And thank you for thinking of North Yuba. I would make a comment towards Director Hickman. However much revenue comes in, North Yuba will spend it. So whatever it is, if it's 10, 20, they will spend it. And they're currently not spending it on anything having to do with trying to actually build any real infrastructure to increase the customers. And of course, I'm speaking as a private citizen watching all of this. I was wondering two things. Is there any language in the 2005 agreement that requires North Yuba Water District to put the $709,000 guaranteed payment towards maintaining the Forbestown ditch? The reason I ask is that I recently, as you are maybe aware, I recently won my lawsuit where the Water District violated the California Public Records Act, and documents have been coming in for me. One of the things that I requested was a copy of all the maintenance records for the Forbestown ditch. And I was not surprised that there actually aren't any maintenance records. There's repair records when things blow out, but there are no maintenance records. So I'm wondering, is there any language in that contract that would force North Yuba to use the 709 to maintain a ditch as opposed to just buying fancy Jeeps and having $1 million salary budget?
Thank you for the question. At the risk of sounding evasive, I need to be careful because this, your question specific to the 2005 agreement isn't agendized or part of this tab's content, but I will give you one simple answer and not expand, and the answer is no, there is not.
Okay, one last quick question. You mentioned the mutual aid agreement from 1996.
Yes.
And I was wondering, could you just tell us a little, I'm not familiar with that.
What is that? Just on general mutual aid. So a mutual aid agreement in general is where you have supporting districts that support each other through an agreement in times of emergency or unforecasted events. So it could be, you know, as recent, if you followed South Feather board meetings, we've entered mutual aid agreements with Paradise Irrigation District, specific to fire damage, Berry Creek Community Services District, etc. So that's not uncommon for districts to have those types of agreements and really help each other out in a time of need. South Feather and North Yuba do have a mutual aid agreement for those types of emergency or repair services that can call upon each other. What I will say is it's not a requirement that you have to execute that mutual aid agreement. It depends on availability, equipment, resources, all those things at the time of the need. But it's just kind of a good partnership that many districts have. We have a number of them, a handful of them.
Thank you.
Thank you. Any other questions? All right, thank you.
Business item?
Okay, tab 7 is just a cover sheet stating there are no business items seeking approval from the board for the month of January.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you.
Let's move into director's reports. John, you want to start us out?
I'm good right now. Thank you.
Todd?
Yeah, I guess where do I start with this one? So basically, I think we're in remarkable times here. I have the property on the corner of Foothill Minor, and a couple weeks ago, my little office trailer was stolen off of that property.
What? The land sea container?
Not the sea containers, fortunately, but the trailer that was in the middle. And it was a beater of a trailer too, you know, 1970s vintage. I mean, just suitable as my office trailer. There's something I plan to replace. Basically, they pulled in. There's one neighbor that lives beyond that. They backed into his trailer up at his property, I think, before they stole my trailer. But I just find this almost unfathomable that anybody would steal a trailer like that. I mean, it was just such a beater one step away from the junkyard. So I think that says a lot about the remarkable times that we're in right now. And I think, too, what's unique now is, well, obviously, I guess the one thing that makes me feel good about it is if somebody needed a trailer like that that bad, thankfully that they have it. It was clean. There was new blankets in there, all kinds of good stuff, you know, nice and hot plate. So I guess I feel good that somebody needed it that bad to steal it. But again, it is remarkable that somebody would steal a trailer like that. I think we're in a unique time because I think we have a homeless population that still has vehicles. Right, I see it, you know, down in the Bay Area. There's a guy that's close to where I am when I'm there, and he's, you know, drives a Mercedes, and yet he moves his motorhome around from neighborhood to neighborhood to park. You know, so again, these are unique times. This current homeless population is not what it was in you know past times. So again, it's remarkable that that's going on. But again, I guess I'm just throwing that out there for everybody. Watch your stuff. I think maybe things you think would happen, you know, would not happen are now happening. So lock your stuff up, particularly with agency. We've seen that with high-value things like generators and other things. But, I mean, again, to steal a travel trailer like that, to go through that effort, these are truly remarkable times. So the positive of that is hopefully somebody that really needed it has it, and, you know, they have a place for now. But, again, the downside is we're in very challenging times, I think. I think we all are going to have to really watch our property possessions, everything. You know, unique times. On another positive note, I heard from some constituents these last month or so, and everything was very positive about the agency. One in particular was just, I guess, the last week or so, the ditch tender over in the Bangor area. I had one of the constituents call, and he was just raving about the service that he did. He didn't give me the name. So I wish I would have had that. He didn't know the name, but I think he said something to the effect that the guy was close to retirement.
Yeah. So it's Rick Broderson. He's our primary ditch tender within your district.
Okay, that's it.
Divisions.
Okay, so I heard excellent things about Rick. The constituent was incredibly impressed. He came out, looked at the issue, told the constituent he'd get back and address it within the next few weeks. Next day, he came out and addressed it. It's something that has been bothering the constituent for a while, and now it's addressed. So again, nothing but positive things about the employees and everything that's going on with this agency. So I really appreciate that. Other than that, I think let's call that for my report today. Thank you.
Thank you.
I think I'll jump in to follow that up. I was doing a physical for a guy that his dream job is to work for the district. And so he's like, I think he goes, you're on the board? He goes, I saw your face on the website. And so I was talking to him, and he just said he goes, he's hoping to gain experience so that one day he can work for South Feather.
That's GM?
Yeah, that's exactly. He's going in there from the bottom all the way down. So, but yeah, it was just kind of interesting to hear that. So I asked for some feedback from him, and just said, like, a lot of people he knows that works here, and just the, you know, wages and just the quality of the company, and so it was nice to hear that. So.
Dennis? I'll back that up again. I've known several friends, quite a few retirees, work really hard here, and they got a great retirement, and they are very thankful that they had a great place to work, buy a home, live in Oroville, coach their football or baseball teams or soccer teams and not have to leave Oroville for quality living. Now that's really something special.
Yep.
And what this place has done over the years is really great for this community. And I want to thank all you guys in these tough times, having to wear these face masks and going through what you guys go through and keeping this place great. It's hard to do, but thank you very much. That's all I got today.
That's all you got?
Yep, Jim, you're up.
I'm just about like you. I've got a good pension and all of that, and it's just right for me. You know, I wouldn't have quit. I'd have to now because I'm 77 years old.
But it worked out, didn't it, Jimmy?
Yeah, it worked out fine.
It did.
Yeah.
Okay. All right. Let's go into closed session, or let's take a breather for 5 minutes.
Any public comments
prior to going into closed session? Let me sure you get that on. None here.
Nothing as of 3:51 in the email.
All right. Let's do a recess. In the open session, in closed session, guidance was given regarding existing litigation, real property negotiation, and labor negotiation. So let's move into.
So we will adjourn the South Feather meeting.
Okay. Let's adjourn the South Feather meeting.
And I'll convene the Financing Corporation.
Let's convene the Financing Corporation meeting.
Okay, thank you, Mr. President. So you see your agenda in front of you for our annual meeting of the Board of Directors of the South Feather Water and Power Agency Financing Corporation. If I may quickly take roll call. President Wilburn?
Here.
Vice President Hickman?
Present.
Director Starr?
Here.
Director Moreland?
Here.
Director Edwards?
Here.
Council Cooper?
Here.
Information System Manager Martinez? Environmental Health and Safety Manager Perrin?
Here.
Finance Manager Wong?
Here.
Power Vision Manager Leon?
Here.
And myself, General Manager Mosley. Thank you. So you'll see in our agenda, item 2 is approval of minutes of the Board of Directors from the January 28, 2020 Annual Finance Corporation meeting.
28 or 26.
It's from last year.
It's from last year.
Oh, yeah.
It's last year's minutes. Okay. I'm seeking approval from the Board on
that. I move that we approve the minutes of our annual meeting of January 28, 2020.
Second.
First and second. Any comments or questions? All right. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. 5 ayes. Public participation? Anybody out there still?
We're not broadcasting, so.
Okay, election of officers.
Okay, so similar to the previous years, this is item election of officers. You can read the bylaws require that those the president, vice president, secretary, chief financial officer of the board in its formation in 1995. We have an executive director, so we're seeking the recommendation and form of action from the board as follows for 2021 to suggest Rick Wilburn be elected president, Todd Hickman elected vice president, Rafe Mosley as secretary, an executive director, and then Steve Wong, the appointed chief financial officer. So that's a recommendation, so if we could have a motion and
I'll make that motion.
Okay, go for it.
I think that was so moved.
Okay, so moved? Totally. Okay, so we got a motion. Do we have a second?
I'll second.
Okay. Any comments?
Nothing to see.
All righty. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Aye. 5 ayes.
Okay, thank you.
Report of status of projects?
Yes. So again, there's been no material change from last year in terms of the financing corporation and status of projects, other than changes on values and percentages. So you can go through those and see the COPs. With debt obligations, the investment in minor drainage treatment plant project, resolution around the water revenue refunding bonds associated with the minor drainage treatment plant, and then the outstanding balance of that, which is really the most material thing to report because there's a change there as we go each year, is our outstanding COPs are at $25,010,000 with a final maturity of April 1, 2046. Associated with that project. Any comments or questions about the report on status of change? So no new adds from the financing corporation standpoint on debt, and a little bit of reduction based on 12 months have passed.
Then we would also comment that the agency does have some debt with the installment payment agreement that we issued back in 2019, but that was not issued by the financing corporation. It's just an agreement with the agency.
Any other questions or comments on the status of projects? Okay.
All right.